This is the one with two star-crossed lovers.
And their clones.
An ugly, fat old Greek god.
And a portal of perving.
It's called Immortal Beloved.
Here we go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmada War, Dalek, Spacetime and Glam Rock.
Stylophones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are gobbledygook. We'll review them all you see, so join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When.
Who back when?
Hello and welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. This is episode 003, Immortal Beloved. I'm JD, and I'm joined today by Ponkin.
Yes, you are. Hello, JD. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm swell.
Excellent. So we are listening today to Immortal Beloved.
Yes. And oh my God, spoiler alert, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Certainly better than last week.
Oh my God, yes. The absence of a stylophone already makes this a relatively decent episode in and of itself.
It was my reader review for The Crusades, which said that the episode deserved a 5.0 simply because it came after the Web Planet and wasn't the Web Planet. So congratulations, Immortal Beloved. By your placement in the running order, you are instantly a classic.
Would you like to jump right into the bite-sized chunk of Who?
Yes.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, still no jingle. Apologies. Take it away.
The Doctor and Lucy land on a cliff edge, nearly killing Lucy Miller.
But they meet a Romeo and Juliet-esque couple who are about to commit double suicide.
Their parents, gods Hera and Zeus, are not too happy about this.
But they are not quite what they seem.
Zeus's chariot is a helicopter.
And they use walkie-talkies for communication.
And are, in fact, body-swapping immortals.
And basically now it's up to the Doctor and Lucy to save the day.
And that was your bite-sized chunk of Who for this week.
Yeah, exactly. Now you are up to speed.
So, starting off, we are not starting off in the TARDIS this week. We're starting off on the side of a mountain.
I know, it's awesome.
You're listening to this, so you can't sort of see the mountain, but you can imagine from the sounds and the way they're going up, the wind whistling through the mountains. Again, it's another really good soundscape that they've got here.
Yeah, so far they have yet to fail, basically, in the Foley department. Well, okay, not counting the stylophone. You can hear them walking on gravel or almost slipping off the cliff edge. It's very, very cool. It's very well done. Anyway, they, in this case, are Prince Kalkin and Sarati, and they're ascending this mountain.
And, Sarati slips slightly. She's caught by Kalkin. And, Kalkin's quite happy that she didn't fall to her death.
Yeah, because she's exactly. She goes, yeah, I'm not quite ready to die just yet. Essentially, just to sort of speed through their little mini dialogue, they are clearly heading up the hill, up the mountain, to commit suicide because they're talking about, like, hey, is this going to hurt? They've never killed themselves before. Prince Kalkin starts reasoning that, oh, don't worry about it, the fall and the rocks below, probably going to be a quick death at the very least. And then what happens, JD? It is beautiful.
They hold hands, they get ready to jump, and then you get the TARDIS materialising.
Sorry. Gotta throw one thing in there. Not just are they preparing to jump, they get hitched. Prince Kalkin and Sarati, like, right off the bat, get hitched on this mountaintop.
Making their vows in defiance of parents and gods and men.
Yeah, exactly. And then the TARDIS noise, the TARDIS materialises. Massive, massive intro.
Inside the TARDIS, the bickering married couple of Lucy Miller and the Doctor. Lucy calls the Doctor a daft apeth, very northern of her. And
Wait, what does she call him?
A daft apeth.
Apeth.
It's northern. It means a daft bugger.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's a very northern saying. They've actually got Lucy's dialogue down very well.
Nice. Okay.
So she asks, if the Doctor's actually managed to get her back closer to home rather than 1974.
Yeah, which is an allusion to this being right after the horror of glam rock, right?
And, the Doctor's very non-committal about this. But, they open the door, Lucy goes outside.
almost tumbling to her death immediately.
And only just saved by the Doctor.
Yeah.
And she once more rebukes him on his parking ability, which so far she has done every episode so far.
And then they notice Kalkin and Sarati nearby. And we have this... I know what your favourite line in this episode is. We'll get to that later on. This is one of my favourite lines, when Prince Kalkin introduces himself as Prince Kalkin of... I can't remember what it is. Of some
Caliva.
Of Caliva. And Lucy goes, "Oh, a prince, eh? That's fantastic. I'm Lucy of the M62.
And this is my bumbling assistant, the Doctor."
I know. Great intro. So, yeah, basically, they then CSI the scene. Lucy thinks, well, it's kind of coitus interruptus, these two youths up on a mountaintop by themselves, but the Doctor deduces that they had no plans whatsoever of descending again, except, you know, to their deaths. And decides, yes, he will get involved. He will prevent them from killing themselves.
You know, and Sarati and Lucy bond, actually, and it's quite important at this point. You know, Lucy takes her to one side and says, you know, no relationship, no matter who it's with, is worth killing yourself for.
Yeah.
And the relationship between Lucy and Kalkin and Lucy and Sarati is actually quite central to this, a lot more than pretty much anything that the Doctor does. It's very much Lucy trying to help people in this one.
Oh, yeah, very much so. One thing, sorry, just another really lovely line, I thought. It's not just that she says, well, it's not worth killing yourself over. She goes, it's not worth topping yourself for. And then in the background, as, like, the microphone pans aside, basically, we hear Sarati go, what is this topping?
Pretty again, there is a few of those in this episode where the microphone is just lowered as if, you know, you're moving off to another scene.
Yeah, exactly.
And someone says something quite important and you're all funny in this case.
Yeah. Actually, we get another one of those. Sorry. I'm really sorry. We've got so many fantastic lines here. When the Doctor, it's now, I think, the Doctor goes, Lucy, let me handle this or whatever. Like, don't get involved. Let me handle this. And then she walks away with Sarati. And when he calls to Lucy, we don't see this, we don't get it explained, but clearly she makes a rude hand gesture in his general direction. And Kalkin even goes like, what is the meaning of this hand gesture? Presuming that she is a goddess of anger or a fury or something along those lines.
And, you know, to be honest, the characterization of Lucy so far has been absolutely spot on. And, you know, this continues throughout this episode, that she is the driving force of an awful lot of this episode, where the Doctor just seems to turn up, as she says, bumble around a little bit,
yeah,
and save the day. But it's Lucy's work here and Lucy's relationships with all the characters as they go along, for good or bad, that really drives home this story.
Yeah, it's almost like if you compare this to modern Doctor Who, to New Who on TV, you have both the Doctor and, on occasion, the companions being driven by passion, essentially. They're driven by this desire to save people, to do good. Whereas here, Lucy is driven by passion. The Doctor is only driven by competence. He's very clever and he's very knowledgeable as regards technology that we'll encounter in a little bit. But he kind of doesn't really care, I think.
I don't quite think it's he doesn't care. I think that he is being put into situations and he would like to reflect on his decisions before he makes them. And he's not given a chance because Lucy is just...
storms in head first.
Storming in.
Yeah.
But they make a really good couple that way.
That's true. Yeah, they complement each other perfectly.
So climbing the mountain, yeah, is Taden.
Yes.
And he's speaking with General Urries back at his base using some sort of radio.
I believe the technical term is ether trumpet.
Yes, the ether trumpet, which can transmit two-way radio through the ether.
Ether, yeah.
he's spotted Kalkin and Sarati at the summit. But he's noticed that the Doctor and Lucy is with them.
Yeah, and on the other end of the ether trumpet, General Urries is going, oh, who are these other people? Are they reinforcements or revolutionaries? But Taden can't see. He's just too far away at the moment. Anyway, we do find out that Zeus is quite furious and so will not just leave this up to Taden, who basically says, I can talk them back down. Like, don't worry about it. I will sort this out. But Ares simply, General Ares will not have it. He goes, no, I'm sending in the chariot.
Meanwhile, Kalkin has said to the doctor, you know, we were giving prayers to the gods, and will you, you know, use your godlike powers to protect them from the chariots?
Yeah.
And, you know, Lucy and Sarati, meanwhile, are having their conversation around that. Sarati's parents don't approve of Kalkin.
Yeah, exactly.
And
well, Kalkin and Sarati are saying, like, you are gods, are you not? Like, you came here because we got married in defiance of you, but we weren't talking about you. We were talking about these fake gods. And so in the conversation with Sarati, Lucy learns that, oh, these gods are actually your parents. And then she even makes a blatant reference to Romeo and Juliet.
That didn't end well.
No, not very well.
And then the doctor, talking to Kalkin, says that the expression on Kalkin's face is the same one as he used to get all the time from his granddaughter.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
So,
and he's like, Susan, you're way too young to have a granddaughter or something like that.
And, you know, Susan is mentioned here, and it's the first mention of Susan in these Eighth Doctor adventures, and it will not be the last.
Nice. Looking forward to that.
Spoilers.
So anyway, Taden turns up.
And he arrives at them and basically tells Sarati that, right, well, you're coming back down the mountain.
Yeah, this is your destiny. You can't escape your destiny. Points a gun or a rifle at them, which she refers to as a magic stick or something like that.
And then Lucy does what Lucy does best and interferes. And she jumps on Taden and starts fighting over the weapon. It's back to Blood of the Daleks and you know, Gorilla Tom all over again.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lucy is not afraid of people with weapons. She doesn't care. She just jumps on them, grabs them out of their hand.
Well, she's probably had to fight people off the last remaining specimen of T-shirt in Primark at some point.
The helicopter, otherwise known as Zeus's chariot,
yeah, is turns approaching. Up, yeah.
And the doctor tries to get involved, but he's knocked unconscious. And then Kalkin says, you know, you're not going to take me alive, Governor. And shoots Ares.
Yeah, great line, by the way. He's like, you'll never take me alive. And he goes, well, I think I already have. And Kalkin goes, no, what I meant was, you'll never take me and live. Kalkin is badass. I mean,
Kalkin is really, really badass. Considering, you know, a few minutes ago he was going to jump off a cliff, he's now shooting people.
Oh, yeah, he is Chuck Norris.
We get another brilliant line, and for a change, it's not actually done by Sheridan Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And we get the Doctor going, what is this? The planet of idiots. Prince Charming here just shot him. And then we have Kalkin going, no, Prince Kalkin. Yeah, we could actually quote the entire episode at this point. And, you know, every line uttered by Sheridan Smith or Paul McGann is actually very, very funny.
Yeah.
So the General Ares is not well. He's been shot by Kalkin.
Exactly.
And the Doctor and Lucy are now in full take charge mode.
Exactly. And Doc goes, fetch me a medikit. I'm a doctor. Like, fetch me a medikit. No one knows what he's talking about. So Ares then goes, actually, what he's talking about is the, what was it? It was
the casket of healing.
Yeah. I've got it noted on it. Yeah. The casket of healing. And then people like scramble to fetch the casket of healing. He's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Just get it to me. Now let's get him to a hospital. No one knows what a hospital is. So they then plan to take him to the Chamber of Incarnation. It's like, what? What is going on here? Just radio someone on your ether trumpet. So they all board the helicopter, and we cut to the goddess Hera being awoken on, well, I guess the phone or the intercom or whatever. It's Zeus calling, explaining, Ares has been shot. It's your turn to save him. Go to the Chamber of Incarnation.
Yeah, and, you know, at this point, we know that they're probably not quite Greek gods. You know, Hera wakes up and says, I am Hera, goddess of whatever I'm meant to be goddess of.
Yeah.
And, you know, that they've got a son, Ganymede, as well. And Ganymede's been giving Zeus a lot of wine, and he's a bit pissed. So
yeah, he is the official cupbearer of Zeus. In fact, I think at this point we find out, I think he's referred to as the son of Zeus.
Correct. And Zeus is being played by Ian McNeice.
Yes, super famous actor.
Very, very. So he's played Churchill in Doctor Who.
Yep.
And he's also been in Rome, Dune, Doc Martin, and he started off in the 1985 science fiction thriller Edge of Darkness, which was one of the first really dark sci-fi thrillers on BBC.
You're not referring to the Edge of Darkness, are you?
No, thankfully.
Okay.
But then again, I liked Edge of Darkness just as I did Edge of Destruction. So.
Okay.
Hera, the goddess of whatever she's meant to be goddess of, is played by Elspeth Gray.
Who's that?
Well, she passed away earlier this year. She was on a lot of 1970s and 1980s things. She was in Tenko. She was in Blackadder. She also has a prior Doctor Who connection.
Oh, really?
Because she played Chancellor Thalia in The Ark of Infinity on Peter Davison's era.
Oh, right. Oh, that's... I have not seen that. Out of interest, whom did she play in Blackadder?
Oh, it was... I think it was someone in the very first season. I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. I will look that up later on. People, IMDb her. Back in the story.
Back in the story. Zeus and Ganymede are trying to play with the two-way radio, and Taden turns up, so... Zeus and Taden have this, you know, good conversation about how loyal Taden is and how disloyal.
He wishes that Kalkin were more like him.
And Ganymede is played by someone with a rather big Doctor Who connection.
Oh, really?
Ganymede is played by Jake McGann.
What? No way.
Son of leading man Paul McGann.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He will also reappear in the Eighth Doctor Adventures as someone incredibly important in some of the later episodes.
Very cool.
The reason why he's in this audio drama isn't quite nepotism, as it may seem. He was doing work experience with his dad.
The national visit your dad at work day.
Well, he was doing work experience. And okay. Big Finish gave him this part to play in Immortal Beloved, and
That's pretty cool.
He plays. I think he's in the Girl Who Never Was, which is a Paul McGann episode from the Big Finish main range.
Okay,
and he's in another three episodes of the Eighth Doctor Adventures in season four as someone very, very important, and I won't say who.
Yeah, don't spoil it. Okay, I'm excited. I am officially excited.
So the Doctor and Lucy are starting to get a bit worried about Ares at this point.
We get this sort of cutscene of them approaching the so-called Incarnation Chamber. But in order to get into the Incarnation Chamber, you have to pass through... Crap, hang on, I've written it down. The Portal of Cleansing. Am I speeding, by the way? Tell me if I'm speeding. I am speeding!
I
am speeding, because Zeus has also... Apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Zeus is not only... Sorry, not only Taden meets Zeus... Also, Kalkin and Sarati meet Zeus. So while General Ares, Doc, Lucy, et co., as in soldiers or whatnot, go to the Incarnation Chamber, the now prisoners, Kalkin and Sarati, are brought to Zeus. And Kalkin accuses his dad of being a murderer, of being cruel and just a false god. He says, no, now the true gods are going to save us. And like, who are these true gods? Oh, they are at the Incarnation Chamber. And Zeus basically goes, well, funny that you say that. I'm heading there right now.
So the Doctor and Lucy arrive at the Portal of Cleansing.
Yeah.
Which the Doctor quite clearly says is a decontamination chamber.
Yeah.
And
which is actually clear to anyone who's a sci-fi fan. Even though no one even has to say anything, we get the explanation of what it is, what it does. And it is clear to anyone who watches and or enjoys sci-fi that, oh, this is a decon chamber.
The Doctor meets Zeus.
Yep.
And Lucy and Taden go inside the airlock decontamination. And she's quite happy at the start. You know, the room is filled with fairy lights, and Taden tells her to close her eyes.
Yeah.
Lucy doesn't, obviously. And she discovers that she can actually see through Taden's clothes.
Yep. And he is hung like a horse, so she gets very excited, at which point he goes, well, you know what, I can see through your clothes as well, m'lady.
and that's why people tend to close their eyes when they're in here.
Yep.
So they get out the other side.
And we get your favourite line, dude. You skipped your favourite line.
Oh, yeah. Can we have a sound bite of this?
I think we can. Sound bites.
Portal of cleansing? Portal of perving, more like.
There you go.
I love Lucy. If that's not blatantly obvious already. So Zeus invites a doctor to go up and watch this operation happening. And, you know, he seems quite nice at this point. He's thanking the doctor for saving Kalkin's life. And, you know, Ganymede is a bit too young to, you know, assume the duties of next in line.
Yeah, but Zeus has at this point already figured out that the doc is an off-worlder, right? Because they're standing outside. They haven't gone up to, the little... up, whatever it is, the little balcony bit, but they're still standing outside the incarnation chamber, and Zeus is telling him, listen, it will take the portal of cleansing a certain amount of time to withdraw all of the humours, and by the time this is over, the operation will have concluded. And then all of a sudden they have this little dialogue where the doc goes, oh wait, you're calling it an operation now, are you? That's an important, that's a big word. That's, I'm surprised that you're not calling it something else. Because so far I've had walkie-talkies being ether trumpets, the decon portal, or the decon chamber being a portal of cleansing, and so on and so forth. And we get a fantastic set of lines where Zeus goes,
my, what big words you have.
And the doctor goes,
all the better to know you with.
As I said earlier, you know, you can cut and paste most of McGann and Smith's dialogue during this one. And,
yeah, I will.
You know, and yeah, we'll just replay the episode for you because it is actually that good. So the doctor and Zeus now basically come clean.
Yeah.
They both know that the other one is not taken in by anything here. The heavenly powers are far too mechanical. Zeus is not acting like a god. He's acting like a drunken, fat old man.
Yep.
And, you know, they both know where they stand at this point.
Yeah.
So Hera, on the other hand, has Ares brought into the operating chamber.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lucy tells Hera, who is actually seemingly quite distraught at Ares' injury, what she did and, you know, replaced the blood. And Hera, still pretending to be a goddess, just tells Lucy to stop jabbering and shut her mouth as she's about to witness a divine act.
And then puts a helmet on, is it Ares or Tadon?
Ares.
Okay, on Ares.
On both.
And both Lucy and the Doctor up above are somewhat surprised by this. Like, why are you putting a helmet on this man? He's wounded in the chest, not in the head. At which point the Doctor basically puts it together. Because he does recognize the machine that's being used. He says it's an RSK device, which is illegal in, well, most of the known galaxy, as being... What does RSK stand for again? I've forgotten. It's something, something, kinesis. Okay, basically what it is, people, you can hate me however much you want for not knowing what RSK stands for. It's a device that transfers a mind from one place to another. And that's when the doc figures it out. Ares' mind is going to be transferred from his dying body into the very healthy body of Tatum.
So, the remote synaptical kinesis
bingo
device...
Ugh. Just found a note on it as well. God damn it.
Is basically a big mind swap device.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hera is telling Lucy and Tadon to be quiet as she needs to concentrate, still, you know, pretending to be a goddess.
Yeah.
And...
Which is weird. Whom is she pretending for? Is it for Lucy's benefit?
I think she's just so used to pretending at this point. But it has to be for Lucy. And the Doctor, who is in the observation chamber, because she doesn't know what Zeus knows about the Doctor.
That's true. Actually, you know what? Might also be for Tadon, so that he doesn't panic and suddenly change his mind.
And then we get another great line from Lucy, which is, you know, Lucy and Tadon are watching this. And, you know, Lucy, we know she likes shopping at Primark. We know she likes going drinking, but she's now also revealed to be a fan of hospital TV soap dramas.
Yep.
When she quotes, "Why, Nurse Perkins, with your arms up to their elbows in that man's chest, you look gorgeous."
Very relevant. Very topical. Thanks, Lucy. This is definitely the right time for it. Tadon, by the way, is a huge fan of what's going on. He is not objecting at all. He says this is what he was born to do. He is saving his father's life. And Lucy, meanwhile, is arguing, yeah, but your father is also your murderer. He is killing you. Like, while your body may live, the man that is Taden is going to die.
And Zeus and the Doctor have this conversation that this only works if the person who the mind is being transferred into is a clone.
Yeah.
An exact duplicate. And it's revealed that they don't have the ability to accelerate growth on the clones. So what they do is every few years, they grow a new clone,
yeah,
let them live up until around about 30, and then transfer into their bodies.
Yeah.
So what they're actually doing is every time Zeus and Hera and the other Greek gods transfer to a new body, it's killing a 30-year-old,
yeah,
who has their own mind and their own personality. And it is also revealed at this point that Ganymede is the next in line.
After Kalkin,
yeah, who is going to be the next Zeus.
Exactly. So Kalkin is roughly 30. Ganymede is about to turn 16. One might presume they have no idea really what's going on. They think they're the actual children of Zeus and Hera and Ares and all these people. But yeah, it's straight up murder.
Lucy is just trying to convince Taden to just get out of this, but it's not working. You know, he honestly believes that this is what he was born to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Doctor says to Zeus that this is not immortality, this is perversity. And the Doctor, in previous adventures, has met, you know, lots of people who have been immortal or immortal-like.
Yeah.
The Minoan
himself is almost immortal.
He himself is also almost immortal, but the Minoans from Underworld, using Time Lord technology,
okay,
were basically immortal. Mordrin from Mordrin Undead was in a state of self-regenerating decay. So he was basically falling apart forever, never being able to die.
What?
In The Five Doctors, Rassilon gave immortality to anyone that came looking for it, but the immortality was being turned into a stone statue on a pedestal. Mm. Immortality in Doctor Who is generally considered to be a curse, not a blessing in any way. Yeah. And in this episode, it is shown to be a curse in a different way, because in order to be immortal, you have to kill people.
Yeah, exactly. It's a curse for whomever is sacrificed, for whomever is blessed with immortality. It is still presented as very much an ideal state by the people who are practicing this, well, criminal behavior. I mean, they've clearly been enjoying themselves and have justified it to themselves for about a millennium, but at what cost?
So the machine hums, and Taden is now going to be called Ares. Ares is in his body, and Lucy tries to talk to him, but basically gets blown out.
Yeah, which is very weird. It's super weird. When he wakes up, he also starts going like, oh, you know what? I hope that Zeus lives a long time. He then transfers into Ganymede, and that way Kalkin will no longer be obligated to, you know, be turned into new Zeus. Instead, he can then be hunted down by former Taden, now Ares, who just is driven by this bloodlust. And I guess vengeance for having been shot by him.
Yeah, and, you know, but the first thing Ares does when he wakes up is grabs a knife and stabs his former body to death.
Yeah, I've got a question for you, dude. Okay, in the body of General Ares, the older body, is that also General Ares? Or is that now Taden? As in, have they swapped places, or has he been copied and then replaced Taden?
He's been copied. A line that Ares says later on when talking to Hera, they mention that when they first came to this planet, they put their mind into multiple bodies at once.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So it's not necessarily swapping. It is literally like the old tape-to-tape recording.
Yeah.
You basically move from one side to the other. You don't. It's not a swap.
Yeah, so he is actually de facto dying. His personality lives on, but he is also dying every single time. It's very much like The Prestige, the film anyway, not the book. I haven't read the book, but I hear it's very different.
And if you haven't seen The Prestige at this point...
Spoiler alert for The Prestige.
So, we now get the history of what's going on. Because yeah. Zeus says Kalkin had a great childhood. Kalkin lived with foster parents. He now only has a few months left to serve in his position. Then he becomes too old for the process to work as his mind's become too ingrained.
Yeah.
So when that happens, the next clone in line, Ganymede, will take his place and Kalkin gets a big fat allowance and he can go and live wherever he wants.
Yeah.
But then the doctor says, well, yeah, that's all well and good, but until he does become that age, then every day might be his last.
Exactly. And he's just like, yeah, but isn't that true for like basically anyone? Like, anyone could die at any moment. I don't know if this is exactly the same, Zeus, by the way.
Yeah. The doctor says, you know, there are loopholes to this type of immortality. Accidents, being a long way away, power failures, being sick. And, you know, there's generational loss. Every time you clone someone or every time you move into someone's mind, it's not perfect. Things get lost.
Yeah. And that's basically why these things are illegal in the galaxy.
Yeah. There's a reason why the RSK machines are illegal. It isn't an exact science. It's an art.
Yeah.
And you lose things in the cloning. You know, it's bits of things you might lose. The memory of what cinnamon smells like, or you might lose a memory. So as you go, it's like a game of Chinese whispers.
Yeah.
As you move from one clone to the next.
Which almost, by the way, harkens back to when, I don't know in what how great a detail we went into this in the beginning of this episode, but when Zeus and Ganymede are trying to maneuver the ether trumpet or the intercom or whatever it is, and he goes, oh, I can't remember how to use this, and Ganymede goes, oh, you press the green button to call someone and the red button to receive a reply or something like that. And he goes, oh, right, yeah, I swear my memory is going. That could be him getting old. I mean, granted, that could be him just growing old and losing his memory. But it may also be that he's just forgotten stuff. The same goes for Hera, who can't quite remember what she's goddess of anymore.
So, at this point,
yeah,
Lucy arrives. And Lucy does something which the Doctor hadn't done at this point. That the moment she turns up in the room, she realises that Zeus is an old, fat, ugly Kalkin.
Yeah.
So the Doctor hadn't put two and two together until he got other information. Lucy, on the other hand, turns up and goes, ooh, you're Kalkin, but old and fat and ugly. Yeah.
And Zeus goes, actually, I think you've got it the wrong way around. Zeus is me, but young and whatnot.
Yeah. So young outside...
Young and vulnerable. Sorry?
Yes. Lucy is obviously, at this point, you know, enamoured by Prince Charming.
Yep.
And... not enamored at all by older Zeus. So outside, Hera is now having a little chat with Ares. You know, Zeus is quite happy that his body is in perfectly good shape and, you know, just having a nice little chat with his mother. And what we get here is Hera admits that the RSK machine is a bit buggered.
Yeah.
It's not working properly. And frankly, it's going to give up the ghost at any point. And so Hera plots that the Doctor will be able to fix it because he obviously knows what's going on and has a way off the planet.
Yeah, this, by the way, is really the only thing about the story that I dislike. It's a little bit, we were saying before we press record that it's a very linear narrative. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. This is a one episode story. That's cool. And it's actually a good thing, but it's at times a little bit too linear. As in, one thing clearly progresses to B, which progresses to C. So the second the Doctor says, well, anything could go wrong. There could be a power cut or some sort of mechanical failure. Boom, cut to Hera, who's saying, oh, the machine is broken and it may not work very well and maybe it's going to break at some point. And what if we die now before it's fixed? Boom, cut to, spoiler alert, she's going to not be very well very soon.
Yeah, and you actually cut immediately from that to Zeus, the Doctor, and Lucy in with the RSK machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Doctor and Lucy are, the Doctor and Zeus are having this conversation about, you know, what the reasons for immortality is. And, you know, he doesn't want to breed. He wants to make exact copies of himself. Mm. And, you know, Zeus wants the Doctor to fix the machine. And then we get yet another brilliant Lucy Miller line, which is that the human photocopier is running out of toner.
Yeah.
And she manages to, you know, take an incredibly complicated 5-minute conversation between Doctor and the Zeus and transfer it into 7 or 8 words.
Yeah, exactly. She bite-sized chunks of who's it for everyone.
We're not needed. We just get Lucy's lines and stick it at the start of the episode now.
Yeah. The Doctor obviously objects to this. He doesn't want to help him. But Zeus says, I don't want your help. What I want is, I want you to take your spaceship, because he assumes that they've got a spaceship in orbit. He wants him to take the spaceship and basically go to the nearest market and get replacement parts for the machine. And he's going to keep Lucy as insurance.
Well, then we get Zeus visiting Lucy to find out whether her prison cell room is quite as good.
Yeah, to her liking.
But she's not happy because basically he walks in and she could be naked. There's a lot of Lucy thinking that people want to see her naked in this episode.
Yeah, but you know what? She's totally in the right. This is, by the way, I still haven't added this feature to the website. I will. There will be the great Doctor Who trope hunt. And when that happens, when that is finally installed on the website, then this episode will feature a rapey character because Zeus is a massive rapist.
It's going back to the Romans. It's Nero in the Romans.
Exactly.
Again.
Exactly.
And, you know, he basically says, you know, let's go for a nice little walk. But they see Hera and Zeus. And
wait, is it Hera and Zeus? It's Hera and...
Sorry, Hera and Ares.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lucy sticks her foot in it again.
Oh, yeah.
By saying, oh, yeah, I remember. I saw her in the Chamber of Incarnation.
Is that
she
really
was all
old manky lady?
That's my wife. Yeah. Well, I'm sure she's got a lovely personality, says Lucy.
Very nice.
But they've been together for 1,000 years. And then... basically, Sarati is going to be the next Hera, Kalkin is the next Zeus, and then the love is going to continue. So Kalkin and Sarati, who at this point, you know, are still Kalkin and Sarati, will very soon be Zeus and Hera. And even though they loved each other as Kalkin and Sarati, they'll love each other as Hera and Zeus as well.
Yeah. But Zeus also goes, well, you know, when you've been together for about 1,000 years, you want to experiment a little bit. So I'd really like to sleep with you. He just goes, I think you would be a very interesting experience. And it's revealed what he wants is to now clone Lucy to be his personal, pardon my French, bang toy. He just wants to clone her to be like the most realistic, living, breathing, inflatable doll that he can keep in his weird Zeus dungeon.
Very, very creepy,
yeah.
Zeus. You know, at this point, Ian McNeice has been playing Zeus as this sort of, like, drunken, bumbling fool.
Yeah, but and also now, quite wise. Like, after 1,000 years of living, he is quite intelligent and very sophisticated.
But now, he's got rapey hands everywhere.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert from 5 minutes ago, Hera has now collapsed.
Yeah.
So, she's not well. She's sort of having a little fit. And so there they go, off to the Chamber of Incarnation again.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone scrambles. They now need to get the... Who's young Hera again? Oh, that's Sarati. They need to get Sarati. Sarati and Kalkin, by the way, we failed to mention before, they are incarcerated. And not just that, they've been strung up to the walls, to opposing walls, so that they can admire each other in their final moments of living.
Which is, you know...
kind of creepy.
A little bit creepy as well.
Yeah, that's not cool. Please tweet Geneva, because I'm sure that goes against some convention.
It's time for Sarati to give herself over and become Hera. And, you know, Ares, being a bastard, says, right, you can come along as well.
Yeah.
So Zeus is in the Chamber of Incarnation with Hera, the Doctor, and Lucy.
Yep.
You know, the Doctor is doing his level best for doing his, you know, morality thing. He's saying, you know, look, just give it up. Let the girl live. You know, you don't have to go through with this. And the Doctor, you know, isn't listened to. So basically, transfer. Sarati wakes up.
Quote unquote, Hera wakes up.
Hera wakes up.
Yeah.
In Sarati's body. And Lucy at this point.
Wait. Sorry. This is fucking gross. Sorry about the F-bomb. This is so gross because, okay, Hera wakes up. They've done the transfer. The doctor has already, this isn't a huge spoiler because the doctor has already gone, listen, Hera's already dead. There is no point in wiping Sarati. Hera's dead. It's too late. Then Sarati wakes up. Supposedly this is Hera. We know this is Sarati. But, quote-unquote Hera, to further the pretense that she has actually undergone this mind transfer, starts, correct me if I'm wrong, she basically makes out with her dad.
Yes, she does.
This is so weird, man. She makes out with her dad, then tells Ares, give me your knife, I'm going to kill this, whatever. I've missed something. Whom does she want to kill? She wants to kill Sarati.
Hera?
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There are a lot of body swaps going on. This could basically star five clones of Jamie Lee Curtis.
What happens is Sarati wakes up in Sarati's body.
Yeah. Pretending to be Hera.
Yeah. Takes the knife from Ares to kill Hera's old body.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
That's what she says.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
instead,
she instead goes all Michael Myers.
Yeah.
On
Ares.
On Ares.
Yeah, yeah. She totally just circumcises his heart, just chops him into bits. He dies, and now we've got no more Ares, no more Taden, as in Taden's body. We've got no more Hera. The only people left now are Fat Zeus, Kalkin, future Zeus, and Sarati still in her body.
So,
okay. Jesus, we should have made some sort of chart. Okay.
Kalkin then comes up to Lucy and the Doctor.
Yeah.
They are quite shocked to find that Kalkin is walking around, considering the last time they saw him, he was in chains.
Yeah.
But Kalkin has made a deal with Zeus.
Yeah.
And the Doctor just goes, no, this is all a little bit suspicious.
Yeah.
Because, hold on, you and Basmati were going to go up to the top of the mountain. You were going to jump off because you loved each other. You know that this is her, but now you're willing to have a fat old drunkard put into your body. This makes no sense. Yeah, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, and when you phrase it like that, it sounds even dodgier than it actually is.
Basically, the Doctor realizes that Zeus is using Lucy Miller as the leverage.
Yeah.
And
but it's also like in a really weird way. It's not just that he now wants to turn her into a sex toy. He actually wants to clone her indefinitely over and over again so that she can die in a different way every single day.
But what we get from Lucy at this point is incredibly pragmatic. And it goes along with everything that she said. The Doctor cares about the clones.
Yeah, exactly. Lucy just goes, yeah, but it wouldn't be me. It would be these clones. Like, I don't care.
It won't have her memories. It won't have her experiences. It's not Lucy. So, you know, whereas the Doctor is thinking, well, yeah, it actually is Lucy, even though it's growing up differently.
Yeah.
Kalkin obviously believes the same thing because Kalkin's made this deal with Zeus.
Yeah.
But Lucy, who theoretically is the owner of this DNA, should be really her decision.
Yeah.
She doesn't care.
Yeah. If anything, she should at least be a little bit weirded out by it.
But also, what we've got here is the exact opposite of what Lucy actually really thinks. Because she thinks Kalkin should be allowed to live and not have Zeus in the body. So she must think that the clones are in some way important, even if they're not of the original.
Yeah, that they are individuals.
I think she just wants to get out of here, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
So, anyway, Kalkin and Zeus go into the machine.
Yes. And the Doctor has gone, okay, fair is fair, you've got fantastic leverage here, I will do exactly as you say, I will operate the machine.
So,
and he does.
Fat Zeus goes into gorgeous Kalkin.
Yep.
Gets up and, you know, is obviously not Kalkin. He's being arrogant. He's being obnoxious. And he is rapey-facing all over Lucy.
Yeah.
Who basically punches him in the face.
Yeah. She slaps him across the face and then tells Cerati, listen, girlfriend, we have got to get the shit out of Dodge. I've got a plan. They head off. And at this point, Lucy basically loses touch with reality because her plan, spoiler alert, is to go and destroy the TARDIS. Because without the TARDIS, they have no means of going anywhere to repair the machine. So if they destroy the TARDIS, at least at some point very soon, there will be no more clones.
I can't figure out at this point if Lucy is stark raving mad.
Yes, she is.
Or she's actually just fallen in love with this planet and the people and really just wants to help them. It has to be one or the other, and I'm 50-50 either way, because it is the most stupid plan that a companion has ever come up with.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Ugh.
Lucy and Cerati start heading towards the TARDIS, and the Doctor finally, thank goodness, turns up.
Yeah, in a chariot with Prince Charming.
And Prince Charming reveals that he really is still Prince Charming,
yep,
and not Zeus, because, as the Doctor quite blatantly puts it, the toner in the photocopier had finally run out.
Yeah.
And
so instead what he's done is he's taken Zeus's mind and just placed it in the memory banks of this machine. So he's basically now occupying the space of a piece of RAM. And Kalkin is still Kalkin, and all proves this to Cerati by going, well, this, you're standing upon the same rocks where you swore your love to me and where we got married at the start of this episode.
And we get the Romeo and Juliet thing of, you know, they're together, you know, let's have, be married, and finally death. Will, you know, till death do us part.
Yeah, literally this time.
Literally this time.
Yeah, but in order to do so, they will have to further the lie. They will have to tell people that they are, in fact, Zeus and Hera, not Kalkin and Cerati.
They're happy. Lucy Miller and the Doctor go back inside the TARDIS, and Lucy is complaining. Not about, you know, what happened and being lied to, but she's complaining about Kalkin being fit and missing out on a snog.
Yeah. She could have snogged him when instead she chose to slap him. What? What? Wait, I think I got the intonation wrong there. What? What the hell? Lucy, come on.
The thing is, Lucy is being portrayed very consistently,
yeah,
as someone who is fairly shallow.
Yes.
She's being portrayed brilliantly as someone that's really shallow.
Well, actually, I'm going to say not consistently, because a moment ago she was about to sacrifice everything in order to, like, save people's lives, save these clones' lives. And yeah, also, she's not so shallow that she doesn't want to, you know, she does actually not want to bang Zeus when he is fit Kalkin.
That's fair.
She's so appalled by Zeus's character.
Yeah, but it's still her shallow, but in a different way.
Okay,
you know,
she
wants the Prince Charming. She doesn't want what she has seen as fat, rapey Zeus.
Yeah, exactly. She knows that Prince Charming is going to turn into fat, rapey Zeus sooner or later.
So, you know, and the ending, basically, they go off and they're hoping that, you know, the temptation is not going to be there for Kalkin and Cerati to
clone themselves
somehow
again.
Fix the RSK machine. And that's it. And we don't get a mention of the headhunter after this week.
I know, I thought about that. Yeah. There is a slight allusion at the end towards the Doctor's regenerative powers. There's a really sweet ending to this episode, because they're talking about the merits of living forever, or rather the curse of living forever. And he goes, well, I'm a different kind of case. This doesn't really apply to me. And then she says something like, oh, well, will you still need me when I'm old and when I'm 62 or 64 or something? And he goes, what? Are you kidding me? I don't even need you now.
Yes.
Which is hilarious.
She's obviously quoting when I'm 64, and, you know, she actually sings it rather well. And, you know,
I'm unfamiliar with this, by the way. This is a cultural reference that is that has eluded me and my foreignness, I'm afraid.
Will you still need me? Will you still... Sorry, will you still leave me? Will you still need me when I'm 64? It's a song.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And...
I even appreciate your William Shatner-esque rendition thereof. That was gorgeous.
I don't know how to take that, really. Yes, the Doctor obviously says that he doesn't need her. It's a much more loving way than End of Blood of the Daleks, where it was like, I tried to leave you here, but I couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't even end there. She goes, well, now you're bluffing. And he goes, you caught me. So he confesses he wants to carry on traveling the universe with her. It's very sweet. It's a really nice ending, I think.
It is a really nice ending. And, you know, the Doctor and Lucy at this point are obviously much more standard companions than they were at the start.
Yeah.
Something that will all change very soon.
Excellent. Nice. Foreshadowing.
So...
And that's it.
Reviews.
Reviews. Do you want to go first this time?
Okay. I did love the moral ambiguities in this.
Yeah.
It's not all tied up neatly at the end. You know, it is still undecided whether Kalkin and Sarati will end up going the way of Hera and Zeus and starting their own sort of clone, you know, generational... immortality, but we don't know, and we just hope that love conquers all. And the Doctor acknowledges that with all the best will in the world, youthful plans may change when people get close to dying, which, you know, the Doctor has had personal experience of, you know, with regeneration.
True.
McGann and Smith are just very good as always. The funny lines do seem to be shared a bit more evenly between them this week. You know, Lucy gets, you know, a lot. McGann gets quite a few, though. So I loved it. I loved the episode. I thought it was the right length. I think 45 minutes was about the right time for this. Okay. I think that there were a few bits which would have benefited maybe from being an hour long. And certainly expanding on, you know, Ganymede and, you know, what the people do outside of the palace.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think it, it probably would have been a bit too much for a two-parter, but it was just a bit too short. So 45 minutes was probably okay for what you got, but, you know, because a two-parter, I think, would have been a bit stretched. Ultimately, I'm rating this as a 4.1. Which is 0.1 less than Blood of the Daleks. Because I think it's good, but it's not Blood of the Daleks good.
Fair enough.
But it's certainly far better, far, far better than last week.
Very nice. Okay. I'm giving this 4.0. I'm giving this 4.0. I cannot remember what I gave Blood of the Daleks. But I'm giving this 4.0 because where the story fails for me is where the philosophy that behind it and the ethical context that the story is set in makes up for it. It's such an interesting concept, and even though it is not really touched upon in the story, at least not at any depth, you can't help but think about the Doctor regenerating while you go through these passages about cloning and living through your offspring in a way. So that is incredibly interesting. However, as I said, I think it is a little bit too linear. I don't like the whole thing that one scene ends with some line about something's going to happen, and the next scene starts with that thing is going to happen. That happens a few too many times for me. But 4.0, the only thing that we haven't talked about during this episode, but that you brought up just now, is what the hell, what is this world? Where are they? What we found out, and which we also didn't talk about, is Zeus says he was the pilot of a spaceship that landed, that arrived on this planet. And the other people, the other main hombres and chiquitas, Hera, Ares, they talk about some other people just sort of peripherally. They were the crew of the spaceship. And they landed there 1,000 years ago. They had this RSK device, they had the cloning technology, and they just... installed themselves as gods on this planet. But it bugs me a little bit that we don't get to find out at all what kind of mission they were on. What is this planet? Where are they? What is the year? They are human, I would say, but presumably sometime in the future because they have technology advanced enough to take them to a different planet. But still, they opt to use two-way radios and helicopters. So it's... There are a few things that I would just like to have had a little bit more explained, which is why I'm not going over 4.0. That's about it. What can I say? The acting is splendido. Zeus is fantastic. Paul McGann is fantastic. Lucy, just slowly but surely, I am becoming more and more smitten with her. Looking forward to more adventures.
So next time we're visiting Phobos, one of the moons of Mars, where it's a nice, relaxing vacation planet, or so it seems.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I'm getting Star Trek vibes now. Interesting. Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't listened to it yet. You've listened to it. I have not listened to it yet. This is going to be epic. In the absence of mini reviews, please, let me just tell you, by the power of Zeus, you need to rate and review us on iTunes. If you like us in your ear holes, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Check out the RSS feed, check out the website. Follow JD on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. Follow me as well, please. I'm at Ponkin. And that's about it, really.
Goodbye.
Still no tagline, I see.
We need no stinking catchphrases.
Shamalama ding dong, people. Catch you next time. Ciao, ciao.
Back when.